This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Freinas, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about channel marketing in calendar weeks 23 and 24. Freinas is a B2B market research partner helping ICT and tech providers identify niche channel partners by compressing the full journey from identification to qualified first meeting into 4 to 5 weeks. You can find more info in the description.
So today we're really extracting the absolute top channel marketing trends that we've seen surface across, you know, a highly curated set of LinkedIn content from just the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. And if you're a B2B marketing professional listening right now, I mean, navigating these partner ecosystems can feel, well, incredibly overwhelming. But imagine leaving like $3 million on the table this year.
Which is painful to even think about, honestly.
Right. And not because your product failed or, you know, your sales team missed their quota, but simply because your partner ecosystem is running on this dusty 2022 playbook. Today, we're really tearing down the illusion that you can still survive on these random acts of marketing.
Yeah, that's the reality check we're seeing across all the data right now. I mean, we are moving into a highly orchestrated, AI-driven, and marketplace-centric channel reality. The era of just throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what partner sticks is officially over.
Absolutely over. And let's start with that shift, actually.
Right.
Because before we even get into the shiny new AI tools or these massive cloud marketplaces, we have to look at the fundamental mechanics of how we actually market with partners.
The foundational stuff, yeah.
Exactly. There's a massive pivot happening away from ad hoc one-off campaigns. The focus is entirely on building this relentless, repeatable partner marketing engine. And Will Taylor brought some pretty staggering data to the table on this.
He really did. Will pointed out that when a partner is involved, deals close 46% faster.
Wow.
Right? And they also run 32% larger. Plus, companies that actually invest in partnerships are 24% more likely to hit their revenue targets. So that translates to leaving anywhere from $1.4 to $3 million on the table annually if you just skip the partner step entirely.
Wait, I'm looking at these numbers. 32% larger deals. I have to play devil's advocate here. If it is that lucrative, you know, why isn't every CRO pouring their entire budget into channel marketing?
Yeah.
Like, what is actually breaking down operationally that causes so many of these programs to fail?
Well, they fail because companies skip the unglamorous operational heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get the signed agreement, they put the partner's logo on a directory listing, they do like a 45-minute kickoff call, and then...
And crickets.
Exactly, nothing. They expect revenue to just magically appear out of thin air. They don't actually build the engine. Will Taylor breaks down this required engine into 4 specific parts.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, you have to actually document the system so everyone involved has total clarity on the process. Second, you run a shared content calendar, just like a standard internal marketing team does.
Which makes total sense.
Right. Third, you leverage AI to carry the production burden, you know, drafting the blogs, writing the webinar promos. And fourth, you automate the follow through with milestone reminders so deals don't just, well, die in the pipeline.
That brings up something Christina Carstensen noted that feels so relatable. She asked a room full of partner marketers what their biggest pet peeve was, and the overwhelming answer was the standalone webinar.
Oh, man. The ultimate random act of marketing.
It really is. Think about how this usually plays out. Someone in leadership says, hey, we need to activate this partner quickly. Let's do a joint webinar. And it's treated as the entire campaign.
A total scramble.
Yeah. Usually just a frantic rush to satisfy marketing development funds or MDF.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you beg sales for an email list, you send out a generic invite, maybe 20 people show up, and then you just never speak of it again.
Right. And obviously it yields zero pipeline.
Exactly. Christina makes the point that for a webinar to actually generate revenue, it has to be just one touch point in a much broader buyer journey. You have to engineer the before, you know, warming up the shared audience with co-branded content and social outreach.
And you absolutely need the after, too.
For sure. Turning that recording into white papers, social snippets, and moving those specific registrants into a targeted nurture sequence. I mean, the webinar is just the middle of the funnel, not the whole funnel.
That's so true. And if we zoom out a bit, that perfectly illustrates what Ricky Currier has been seeing out in the market. Mm-hmm. He spoke to 6 global heads of partner marketing at major tech companies, and we're talking many of them north of $1 billion in revenue.
So these are serious players. What do they say?
The consensus was brutal, honestly. Partner marketers are basically stuck operating as glorified event coordinators. They are bogged down in just reactive tactical planning.
But leadership needs something entirely different from them now. I mean, they don't need someone to order branded stress balls or book Zoom rooms.
No, leadership needs them to be CMOs of partnerships. They need strategic orchestration. That means building real infrastructure, you know? Lead intelligence sharing, providing deep sales context to partners, mapping out multi-touch nurture streams.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. It's like carrying buckets of water from a river versus taking the time to build a pipeline. Running one-off partner webinars is carrying a bucket. It feels like hard work. It satisfies the immediate thirst. But the moment you stop walking,
the water stops flowing.
Exactly. Building the engine, the shared calendars, the automated follow-ups that's building the pipeline. Is it like buying a gym membership but only going once a year? If you don't build the daily habit, you're just wasting money and leaving that $3 million Will Taylor talked about up for grabs.
I love that framing. But here is the critical next step, right? You can't pump water through a broken pipe. And you certainly can't run a strategic marketing engine without clean data. The data is essentially the central nervous system.
It tells the marketing body how to move.
Exactly. Which brings us to the second major theme from the last 2 weeks, which is program design and data hygiene. It is wildly unglamorous, but it is the absolute prerequisite for scale.
Yeah, and Tushar Ranka had a brilliant post dissecting this. He pointed out that every single partnership pitch deck this year features the exact same slide AI agents running your partner program.
Naturally. Everyone wants the AI fix.
Right. But he bluntly states that most partner programs simply aren't ready for AI.
Because they lack clean, connected data. I mean, if your data lives in four disconnected tools, AI cannot predict your next big partner. It doesn't even know what it's looking at.
Exactly. If you are listening to this right now, think about your own CRM. How many co-sell opportunities are sitting in stage two that haven't been touched since like Q3 of last year?
Probably a lot more than anyone wants to admit.
Oh, definitely. Because before you go pitch your boss on deploying a fancy AI partner agent, you have to realize that AI doesn't magically fix a broken foundation. As Tushar said, it just makes the cracks run faster.
That's a great quote.
It really is. Yeah. If your CRM is full of garbage data, the AI is just going to confidently index that garbage at lightning speed.
And Trunalby echoed this perfectly when he was examining AWS Partner Central. Now, to be clear, the AI agents inside AWS are genuinely powerful today. They can read your meeting notes, turn them into structured opportunities, fill out the required fields.
Which is amazing.
Whoa, it's huge. They can even flag co-sell funding that you are eligible for but didn't even know about. So the manual data entry that has historically made co-selling so miserable is finally going away.
But the catch is that an agent can only act on what is already there. Trunal points out that if your CRM is basically a graveyard of stale opportunities, the agent doesn't revive your pipeline.
It just moves through the mess faster.
Exactly. The partners who are going to win the AI era aren't the ones with the flashiest generative AI strategy. They are the ones who put in the boring, painstaking work of keeping their CRM synced and clean in real time.
Which means we also have to completely rethink how we design the programs themselves. Because, you know, if we are tracking the wrong data, the AI is optimizing for the wrong outcomes. Rahul Sharma posted about the death of the static tiered partner program. You know, the ones, the classic gold, silver, bronze pyramid.
So they're the ones where a partner hits a revenue target like 3 years ago, gets platinum status, and then just coasts on those margins forever.
Exactly. Those legacy tiers are built entirely on lagging indicators. They reward what a partner did in the past, not the momentum they are actually building today. Rahul argues that these traditional structures actively hold your highest potential partners back.
How so?
Well, the legacy partners at the top get complacent because their margins are fully protected. Meanwhile, the mid-tier partners get demotivated by impossible revenue jump requirements, and the new, hungry startups are starved of the financial margins they need to actually scale your product today.
Wow. It's like judging a stock entirely on its performance from a decade ago rather than looking at its current R&D pipeline. It makes no sense in a fast-moving market.
No sense at all.
Instead, we are seeing a shift toward dynamic, behavior-driven ecosystems. These are programs that reward real-time milestones, things like early deal registrations, joint business planning, or proof-of-concept deployments. And they reward the partner the exact moment they hit those milestones.
Right. And Corey Jonikin backed this up by comparing outdated programs to legacy technology. He noted that old programs measure activities like How many portal logins did we have this month?
Or how many basic certifications were completed?
Exactly. How much MDF was drained?
Vanity metrics.
Yeah.
We get so caught up in measuring the activity that we forget to measure the outcome.
Right. Whereas the modern dynamic programs measure actual business outcomes, active sellers, qualified pipeline generated, revenue per partner, time to first deal. What's fascinating here is if 20% of your partners are driving 80% of your revenue, you have to ask yourself, is the program actually underperforming?
Or are we just obsessing over vanity metrics, right?
Exactly. Instead of fixing the data architecture so we can actually focus on rewarding the right behaviors.
It always comes back to the data architecture. So, okay, you've built the engine, you've cleaned the data, so the fuel is pure. Now, where does the actual transaction happen? The data from these past 2 weeks points to a massive, undeniable shift toward marketplaces and co-selling as the new commercial backbone.
Absolutely. Marketplaces are no longer just digital storefronts where you buy a single software license. They are the core commercial engine for the entire AI platform economy. Richard E. and Palani Sundaramurthy discussed a massive announcement regarding this.
The Microsoft one, right?
Yes. The expansion of Microsoft Marketplace, multi-party private offers, or MPOs, across Europe and eventually other regions.
Let's actually break down the mechanics of an MPO, because it sounds like heavy corporate jargon, but it is fundamentally rewiring how enterprise software is bought and sold.
It really is. Historically, an enterprise customer bought technology in complete frustrating silos. Let's say they wanted to deploy a new security solution. They had to negotiate and sign a contract to buy the software from one vendor. Then they had to negotiate a separate contract for services from a consulting firm. Then they had to find a deployment partner somewhere else and support from yet another vendor. They basically had to act as their own systems integrator, manage multiple billing cycles, and stitch it all together themselves.
Which, you know, takes months, involves endless legal reviews, and is just an absolute nightmare for the buyer.
An absolute nightmare. MPO changes the mechanism entirely. It allows multiple partners, so the software creator, the reseller, the service provider, to come together into one integrated commercial offer.
That's huge.
Yeah. The primary vendor packages the software, the consulting, and the implementation into a single custom offer on the Microsoft Marketplace. The buyer clicks purchase once, one contract, one billing cycle, and the marketplace automatically routes the correct margins and payouts to each respective partner behind the scenes.
Because customers don't want silos anymore. They want complete business outcomes, simpler procurement, and trusted ecosystems. Here's where it gets really interesting. Roman Kursanov shared a case study from David Maurer at LucidLink that proves how powerful this is.
Oh, I saw this.
LucidLink managed to get 39% of their net new annual recurring revenue to run through partners. And their secret wasn't some magic marketing campaign. It was designing their channel architecture around every single buying path.
Right. The philosophy of the answer is always yes.
Yes. If a customer wants to buy through a traditional reseller, the answer is yes. If they want to use their committed cloud spend and buy through the AWS marketplace, yes. If they want a managed service provider and MSP to handle the entire thing, yes.
It's brilliant.
It sounds like vendors are finally removing the toll booths on the highway. Instead of forcing the customer down a single company-mandated road, you are letting them drive exactly how they want to buy. You aren't running separate competing transaction desks. They all attach to the same customer-centric motion.
And the financial results of this approach are just undeniable. Nicole Dezen from Microsoft shared data showing that partners who are using the marketplace for co-sell are seeing 75% faster deal closures.
That's a massive acceleration.
It is, not to mention 69% larger deals. When you remove the friction from the procurement process, when you stop forcing the buyer to sign four different contracts, everything accelerates.
Okay, so we have the marketing engine running, the CRM data is clean, and the marketplace highway is completely open for business.
Mm.
But how on earth do you manage the immense daily scale of this ecosystem? I mean, we are talking about tracking thousands of partners and potentially tens of thousands of daily interactions globally.
It's a logistical mountain.
Right. And this brings us to our final major theme from the sources,
mm-hmm.
AI and partner execution, or what people are starting to call the agentic era.
Yeah, this is where AI shifts from a broad, high-level ecosystem narrative into hyper-specific daily operational execution. Dominic Garabedian had a crucial warning for anyone owning co-sell motions right now. He said if your playbook doesn't explicitly evolve around the AI priorities of the major cloud providers, specifically things like AWS Bedrock and Agent Core, your pipeline is going to stagnate.
Let's clarify those terms for a second. If you are an ISV, an independent software vendor building your own tech core, why does your playbook need to care about AWS Agent Core?
Because you have to look at the incentives of the AWS account executive.
Yeah.
Their sales reps are heavily incentivized and measured on AI attach rates right now. They need to sell workloads that utilize Amazon Bedrock, which is their foundation model service, and Agent Core, which powers autonomous AI agents.
Okay, I see where this is going.
Yeah, if your software product doesn't connect to that specific AI story, the AWS rep has zero financial incentive to bring you into their deal.
So you can't just pitch how great your software is in a vacuum.
Exactly. Dominic argues you have to lead with the AWS workload, not your own product. You have to show how your solution makes an Agent Core workload run faster or makes it more secure or, you know, cheaper to operate. If you don't align with their compensation metrics, you are just a feature in someone else's pitch and you'll get left out of the room.
That makes total sense. You have to engineer your playbook around the financial incentives of the giant you are partnering with. And it's not just about selling AI. It's about using it to manage the relationship. We saw posts from Matt Yankishin and Ruba Borno discussing how AWS partner central agents are fundamentally changing the daily administrative game.
Oh, absolutely. These internal AI agents, which are actually built on Amazon Bedrock, are cutting partner administrative time by up to 40%.
That's almost half their week back.
Right. Partners can now create co-sell opportunities using simple natural language. Instead of a partnership manager spending 2 hours on a Friday afternoon filling out massive, rigid forms, they just describe the parameters of the deal to the agent, and the AI handles the structured data entry. It instantly finds qualifying opportunities and flags funding.
And John, you showed exactly what this looks like in the wild. His company, Sugar, has an AI agent that monitors inbound AWS referrals 24/7. Think about what happens usually. A referral comes in, it gets assigned to a rep, the rep gets busy, and the deal stalls out and dies.
Happens all the time.
But Sugar's AI agent monitors the pipeline constantly. The second an opportunity goes quiet, the agent surfaces it, explains exactly why it's stalled based on the communication history, and hands the account owner everything they need to revive the deal with perfect context. No digging through CRM notes, no missed follow-ups, just getting the deal back in motion instantly.
It's incredible. But, you know, this raises a massive question. If AI is doing all the deal registration, if it's monitoring the pipeline 24/7, finding the co-sell funding, drafting the follow-up emails, does the human partnership manager eventually become obsolete?
It's the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And Rob Moyer tackled it beautifully. He argued that the more partnership work gets automated by AI, mm-hmm. the more important human judgment actually becomes. Technology accelerates relationships, but it absolutely cannot replace the foundation of them.
I'll push back on that a bit. Why not? I mean, if the AI is doing 90% of the heavy lifting, why do we need the human in the loop at all?
Because nobody is in partnerships to run a charity.
Mm.
We are here to drive profitable revenue, and the best partnerships create a business annuity. Mm. You know, repeat referrals, repeat executive introductions, repeat customer wins over years. AI is exceptionally good at automating the operational tax, the data entry, the forms, the scaling of basic activities.
Right.
But a profitable, long-term business annuity is created by human trust, strategic alignment, and mutual commitment. It's the trust that comes into play when things go wrong. Like when an account executive decides to take a risk and give your partner a chance on a highly competitive multi-million-dollar deal.
Or when someone picks up the phone on a Sunday because a deployment went sideways and the customer is angry.
Precisely. No AI agent, no matter how advanced, creates that kind of trust. AI scales the activities, but humans create the annuities. The best partnership leaders aren't fighting the AI. They're using it to automate all that repeatable administrative work so they can spend 80% of their time on the irreplaceable human work of building trust and strategy.
That is a critical distinction to make. The AI handles the activity metrics so the humans can focus on the business outcome metrics. But before we wrap up today, I want to leave you with one final kind of sobering data point to mull over regarding this AI era. We've talked a lot about how AI manages your internal data, but what about how AI views your company from the outside? Alana Zapp did a fascinating study looking at 120 mid-market B2B tech companies to see if their partner programs were actually discoverable.
Discoverable meaning what? Like if I Google it?
Not Google. Discoverable by AI search tools and large language models like ChatGPT, Claude, or Perplexity. Buyers and potential partners are increasingly skipping traditional search engines and asking AI to find solutions and recommend partner programs for them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And Alana found that a staggering 78% of these mid-market B2B tech partner programs were completely invisible to AI discovery tools.
Wait, 78% invisible?
Entirely invisible. It's not that these are broken companies. They have real teams, they have partner portal pages that look perfectly fine to a human scrolling on a web browser, but their websites and data aren't structured in a way that allows the AI engines to read, scrape, and index the information.
So the AI just ignores them.
Exactly. When a potential buyer goes into ChatGPT and asks, find me an integration partner for this specific security software, those companies just get skipped. They aren't on page 2 of the results. They aren't on the list at all.
That is terrifying. You could build the perfect marketing engine, have pristine CRM data, and be fully integrated to the marketplace. But if the AI can't read your public footprint, you don't exist to the next generation of buyers.
It is terrifying. So the ultimate question you have to ask yourself this week, as buyers and partners increasingly use AI to search for solutions, does your carefully crafted partner program actually exist in the eyes of the AI, or are you operating entirely in the dark?
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, AI and B2B marketing, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the evolving world of channel marketing. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an update.